Frank Muir goes into fear and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Now, Mr. Brown, just a few more questions on this insurance examination. Yes. Nothing to be afraid of.
No.
Just your medical history. Did your father die a natural death?
No, he had a doctor.
Man to psychiatrist. Doctor, I have this horrible recurring nightmare. I see my mother-in-law hunting me with an enormous man-eating alligator. Oh, it's terrifying. I see those terrible yellow bloodshot eyes and dry, scaly skin, those ghastly long sharp
teeth. Yes, he does sound pretty nasty.
Oh, that's nothing. Wait till I tell you about the alligator. During the last war, there was a soldier who was terrified of being called up, so he asked a rather bright friend how he could get out of it, and the friend said, it's easy. Do what I did. Buy yourself a trust. Say you've been wearing it for years, they'll never call you up. So the scared young man did as he was advised at his army medical examination. The officer looked at the truss and said, how long have you been wearing that? Oh, several years. I see. So the officer wrote, I'll put you down for the Camel Corps.
The Camel Corps?
Yes, if you've been wearing a truss upside down for several years, you'll have no trouble riding a camel at all. There was this tiny little man who was a very proud car owner, having a drink one day. When he left the pub, he was furious to see that someone had sprayed his car bright pink, this brand new car. Boiling with rage, he rushed back into the bar and shouted, All right, who painted my car pink? Come on, own up, who painted my car pink? And from the recess of a corner table, an enormous labourer rose to his feet, nearly 7 foot tall, with great burly arms. I did it.
Oh, yes, well, I just thought you'd like to know the first coat's dry.
An Irish drill sergeant bawling out a platoon of terrified recruits.
Look at us! What do you look at us? Hopeless! You called that a straight line? Fall out and have a look at it!
Doctor, I'm on the operating table. You can tell me, is this operation dangerous?
That is what we are about to find out.
Psychologists tell us that we laugh at what we fear. In times of war, all kinds of derisory names are invented for the enemy. Not because they're really funny, but because the reality is so frightening that it needs dressing up to be palatable. But as well as keeping one's mind off danger, fear is also a useful safety valve to control recklessness. Here's what Leonardo da Vinci wrote.
Come si indeggerato la vita, come si paura anche preservare.
Thank you.
And in English...
Oh, English, I beg your pardon. As courage endangers life, even so fear preserves it.
That's even better. Ambrose Bierce said...
Coward, one who in a perilous emergency thinks with his feet.
Though fear has the advantage that it sometimes keeps you alive, it also has disadvantages. Edmund Burke.
No passion so effectively robs the mind of all its powers of acting and reasoning as fear.
And Bertrand Russell.
Worry is a form of fear, and all forms of fear produce fatigue. A man who has learned not to feel fear will find the fatigue of daily life enormously diminished.
Well, it's easy to say, but not as easy to carry out. How does one learn not to feel fear? We're surrounded by things that inspire fear. Not only the dangers of war, disease, motor accidents and so on, but simple domestic things as well. Here's Dr. Johnson on the subject.
Fear? Fear is one of the passions of human nature of which it is impossible to divest it. You remember the Emperor Charles V when he read upon the tombstone of a Spanish nobleman, here lies one who never knew fear, wittily said, then he never snuffed a candle with his fingers.
Probably never tried to mend a light switch either. One of the sources of fear which is becoming increasingly worrying is violence. On the international level, there are activities like urban guerrillas, and on a domestic level, there are thieves and muggers. The issue of self-defense becomes very important in these circumstances.
There is a kid in my building, a little odd kid named Leon. And Leon takes karate lessons. Leon is always walking around with his hand cocked at a right angle like this, you know? And everyone said that I should learn judo because I'd be an animal. But judo to me has always been a thing of the bigger your opponent is, the bigger the beating he's going to give you. You know? That's the way I feel about it, essentially. The Japanese lost the war, I feel. I don't want to get involved, you know. So I lived in fear, and then my good friends told me in the back of Esquire magazine, you can send away for a fountain pen that shoots tear gas. It's a real fountain pen, and it secretes a gaseous billow, you know. Really great pen, $7.50. I send away, comes in the mail 2 weeks later in a plain brown wrapper, you know. I unscrew it, I put in the tear gas cartridges, and I clip it in my breast pocket, you know, and I go out. A long time ago this was, some friends in my neighborhood had a surprise autopsy, and I'm invited for the evening. I'm coming home by myself, 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's pitch black, and I'm all alone, and standing in my lobby is a Neanderthal man. With the eyebrow ridges, you know, and the hairy knuckles like this. He just learned to walk a wreck that morning, I think. Came right to my house in search of the secret of fire, you know. A tree swinger in the lobby at 2 o'clock in the morning. A mouth breather looking at me like, you know. I took my watch out and I dangled it in front of him. You know, they're mollified by shiny objects sometimes. He ate it. And the pressure, and I backed over and I pulled out my tear gas pen and I pressed the trigger and some ink trickled on my shirt, you know. I made a mental note to call Esquire and tell them. I'm standing in the lobby, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and it was a product of a broken home, you know. I had a fountain pen in my hand there. I tried writing on him with it, you know. He came to me and he started to tap dance on my windpipe. Very quickly, I lapsed into the old Navajo Indian trick of screaming and begging.
Woody Allen. Actually, in the event of attack by an armed robber, almost any weapon is handy, and sometimes the unlikeliest ones are the most effective. Here's a little news item from the Daily Mail.
Mrs. Mary Garrett, 59, threw a bunch of bananas at a masked bandit with a gun who burst into her shop and post office at Hookwood near Hawley, Surrey, yesterday. The man fell down, handed over a toy pistol and said, "Call the police, I give up."
Well worth bearing in mind that. Of course, if the muggers don't get you, there are plenty of natural disasters that can. If you're the sort of person to worry about things, there are plenty of dangers to worry about. Floods, for instance. Can one be sure that safety precautions are adequate? A report from The Observer.
London Transport's flood danger drill is like this. When the standard police warning of an exceptional high tide is received, a man is sent to look over the wall at Charing Cross.
We can sleep safe in our beds. A lot of the fears that prey on the mind have a more psychological basis. They aren't actual disasters, but irrational anxieties. Sex is the basis of many of them. Fear of women, for example. News from the Daily Express.
Every time 36-year-old Jack Lee stands by his kitchen window, he gets the glad eye from dozens of factory girls. And because he's embarrassed at being their unofficial pin-up boy, the rating valuation of his home has been cut by £3.
Poor fella. A lot of people, of course, suffer from phobias about particular objects or situations. Like electricity, for example. Now, we know it works, but it's difficult to say how and why, and it's therefore potentially frightening. It certainly disturbed this character created by James Thurber.
Her own mother lived the latter years of her life in the horrible suspicion that electricity was dripping invisibly all over the house.
Even if you can come to terms with your domestic life, there's always the fear of something totally unexpected. I mean, say you just started your new job, which was guard on the Empire State Building, and on that very night, King Kong chose to climb up the outside of it.
Hello, Mr. Nelson. Yes, this is Sam Hennessy, the new guard. Yeah, sir. I hate to bother you at home like this on my first night, but See, something's come up, sir, and it's not covered in the guard's manual. Yeah, I looked in the index. Yes, sir. I looked under unauthorized personnel and people without passes and apes and apes' toes. Apes and apes' toes, yes, sir. There's an ape's toe sticking through the window, sir. See, this isn't your standard ape, sir. He's between 18 and 19 stories high, depending on whether there's a 13th floor or not. Sir, I'm sure there's a rule against apes shaking the building. There is, yes. So I yelled at his feet. You know, I said. A shoe ape and I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave, sir. And I know how you like the new men to think on their feet, sir. So I went to the broom class and I got out a broom without signing out a requisition on it. I will tomorrow, yes, sir. And I started hitting him on the toes with it, you see. But it didn't seem to bother him too much. See, there are these planes, sir, and they're flying around him and they're shooting at him, you know, and they only seem to be bothering him a little bit, so I figured I wasn't doing too much good there with a broom. Did I try swatting him in the face with it? Well, I was going to take the elevator up to his head, sir. See, but my jurisdiction only extends to his navel.
Bob Newhart. At least fear of real things like giant apes is logical. What makes fear so frustrating as an emotion is that so many of the things one is afraid of are completely unreal. In the words of Shakespeare's Macbeth,
present fears are less than horrible imaginings.
Yes, imagination is responsible for a lot of panics. And the more vivid the imagination, the greater the fear. Montaigne.
He who fears he will suffer already suffers because of his fear.
Friedrich Nietzsche.
We are terrified by the idea of being terrified.
Mark Twain.
I'm an old man and have known a great many troubles, but most of them never happened.
It's that business about cowards dying many times before their deaths. But few of us can withstand fear, particularly in a spooky situation. I mean, say you're alone in an old house. Every rattle of the window becomes a burglar. Every creak of the floorboards becomes a ghost. And the idea of ghosts is a pretty scary one, whatever anyone says to the contrary. A letter to the News of the World.
May I say a few words that should completely remove fear of ghosts? The information has been given to me by ghosts. If you're privileged to see a ghost, do not bolt like a frightened animal. Take an intelligent interest in it. Talk to it and ask if you can be of help in any way.
I see, yes. Very handy information. I hope you're taking notes of this. While we're on this spooky subject, let's investigate it a bit further. Mr. Alfred Marx will now read you a pathetic ballad about body snatchers by Mr. Thomas Hood, which is entitled Mary's Ghost.
'Twas in the middle of the night, to sleep young William tried, when Mary's ghost came stealing in and stood at his bedside. Oh, William dear, oh, William dear, my rest eternal ceases. Alas, my everlasting peace is broken into pieces. I thought the last of all my scares would end with my last minute, but though I went to my long home, I didn't stay long in it. The body snatchers, they come and made a snatch at me. It's very hard, them kind of men won't let a body be. You thought that I was buried deep, quite decent like and cheery. But from her grave in Mary Bone, they've come and boned your Mary. The arm that used to take your arm is took to Dr. Vise.
and both me legs are going to walk to the hospital at Guy's. I vow that you should have my hand, but fate gives us denial. You'll find it there at Dr. Bell's, in spirits and a file. As for me feet, the little feet you used to call so pretty, there's one I know in Bedford Row, the other's in the city. I can't tell where my head is gone, but Dr. Carpew can. As for my trunk, it's all packed up to go by Pickford's van. I wish you'd go to Mr. P and save me such a ride. I don't half like the outside place they've took for my inside. The cock it crows, I must be gone. My William, we must part. But I'll be yours in death, although Sir Astley has me art. Don't go to weep upon me grave and think that there I be. They haven't left an atom there of my anatomy.
Alfred Marx reads Thomas Hood. And now a program announcement.
We would like to warn you that the next part of our program is not suitable for those of a nervous disposition. Boom!
David Hatch, from sorry, I'll read that again. As well as fear of external influences, there are many people who are afraid of themselves. This fear is a form of guilt, and quite as frightening as any other sort. Samuel Butler.
Thou safe, O Lord, to keep us this day without being found out.
Yes, that's the great fear of the guilty person. Guilt is a particularly human feeling, in the words of Mark Twain.
Man is the only animal that blushes, or needs to.
Guilt is a fear that there's something wrong with you, or what you do. It manifests itself in many ways on many subjects. Money is often a source of guilt, but it shouldn't be, according to the Weekend Telegraph.
Today a man pretends to be almost ashamed if he inherits a few hundred pounds from his father. Now, this is silly. The instinct for parents to preserve something to pass on to their children is basic, even among rodents.
Sort of information hardly likely to alleviate a sense of guilt. And also, of course, that feeling the morning after. Fear of what you might have said the night before. Here's an advertisement from the Brighton Evening Argus.
Does lady travelling home one night with a bottle of sherry and apocryphal Bible remember long conversation with travelling companion who hereby confesses with shame having advanced blasphemous theories and has now bitterly repented of them?
Doesn't offer to give the sherry back, does it? Unfortunately, one of the major focuses for guilt is sex, which causes much anxiety and disturbance. A letter to The Guardian.
As a mother of three daughters and the preschool playground superintendent, I should like to say how much I agree with Mrs. Van Twest about the way in which our fear and guilt-ridden toy manufacturers shy away from producing male dolls complete with genitalia. My 8-year-old daughter has been indignant on this subject for several years now, and from a very early age used modelling clay to remedy deficiencies.
That's what's known as making a thing of it, isn't it? Sexual guilt. Sexual guilt is the basis of the success of much of the pornography business. People sneak off shame-faced to see smutty films and buy dirty books. This attitude to the subject is not a modern invention. Here are three extracts from the diary of Samuel Pepys.
January 13th, 1668. Stopped at Martin's, my bookseller, where I saw the French book which I did think to have had for my wife to translate, called L'Escole des Filles. But when I come to look at it, it is the most bawdy, lewd book that I ever saw, so that I'm ashamed of reading it. And so away home. February 8th. To my bookseller's. And there stayed an hour and bought the idle roguish book L'Escole des Filles, which I bought in plain binding, avoiding the buying of it better bound, because I resolve as soon as I've read it to burn it. That it may not stand in the list of books, nor among them, to disgrace them if it should be found. February 9th.
Lord's Day. I to my chamber, where I did read through Les Scolds des Filles, a lewd book, but what do no wrong once to read for information's sake. And after I'd done it, I burned it, that it might not be among my books to my shame, and so at night to supper, and to bed.
Guilt and fear are unfortunately not always just passing emotions. They can stay with you, and thus various neuroses are caused. And anyone can get neuroses. A report from The Guardian.
After the hearing, Mrs. Gamble said she'd sent Butch to London to have psychiatric treatment for his inferiority complex. Mr. Robert Horsford, a dog psychiatrist of the Canine Defence League, says he can cure him of his bad habit, which springs from an unfortunate experience in early life. He was bitten by a bigger dog.
Woody Allen must be bitten by a bigger human being. That sort of behaviour can be extremely unpleasant and liable to make one feel persecuted. There is a difference between feeling persecuted and being persecuted. But if you get an anonymous letter threatening to kill you, you know it's the real thing.
Alone. Don't panic, lad. Bolt the door, bolt the door. Window shut? Yes, never get in there. Now, where can I hide? I'll get in the sideboard, I think. No, I'll sit in the chair back to the wall. And I can see everything that's going on. You're not frightened. You're not frightened. Keep saying to yourself, you're not frightened. You're not frightened. It's only one man, me against it. How do I know it's only one man? Might be the whole of Durham. Might be a march down. No. It's one man. One harmless crank. With a gun. I'll reason with him. He'll probably be quite a nice bloke. I'll say, hello, old man, have a drink. What did you say your name was? Tom. Hello, Tom. How are you? Well, Now. What's all this about you wanting to murder me? Here's a ticket for Hancock's half hour. There, you see, I'm not a bad sort of chap, am I? You won't hurt me now, will you? You like me now, don't you? You won't touch me, will you? Who am I kidding? You'll clobber the life out of me. I mustn't panic. I must not panic. Relax. Don't think about it. Just do something to occupy your mind. Feed the goldfish. That was a funny film you saw last night, wasn't it? Uh-oh. Take hold of yourself. Come on now. Pull yourself together, man. Have a drink. Oh, it's marvellous what a glass of cream soda can do for one. Oh, dear. I wonder what I'll look like with white hair. Now, sit down quietly. Now, you'll be all right. What's that? Oh, the phone. It's the police station. Hello. Anthony Hancock speaking. Hello? Who's there? Hello, who is it? Hello? Hello? Who are you? Who is it? Hello? He's hung up. It was him. He knows I'm here now. I've given the game away. If I hadn't answered, he might not have come. I bet he was in that phone box around the corner. He's probably out in the garden by now, coming up the path. It's him. I can hear him. He's coming to get me. Oh, Mother, I'm sorry I said those things about you. Where are you, Mother? He's coming to get me, Mother. They stopped. The footsteps have stopped. He's outside the door. I'll bluff him. That's it, I'll bluff him. All right, men, train the machine gun on the door. You 15 men, get ready to pounce on him. Have you got the hand grenades ready, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Corporal?
Sir?
Tear gas ready?
Yes, sir.
He's walking into a trap. He doesn't know it. Machine gun crew, you all ready?
Sir? Ah, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, man, he can't get away. If he's got any sense, he'll go back to Durham while he's still got the chance. Have the battalion of paratroopers arrived yet, Sergeant?
They're hidden in the garden.
Stand by. And the minute he comes in, let him have it with all guns. I get in. Hey, night.
Tony Hancock. Don't worry, it's only Sid James at the door. Mind you, that's bad enough, isn't it? But that just about winds up our look at fear. The only advice I can give you on how to avoid fear is to live your life as safely as possible. And take care if you see a warning sign like this one on a pylon.
Beware. To touch these wires is instant death. Anyone found doing so will be prosecuted.
Next week, Alfred and I will be going into the subject of lust. Until then, from both of us, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Fear was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.